This episode of the Jerry Jonestown Massacre is brought to you by Amazon, Stamps.com, See's Candies, Rouge Designs, and Plastic Object.
This program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
Well, then, you know what? I hate Jerry Jonestown's Massacre. They're fucking assholes.
Pussy.
And, you know, I just can't stand them, you know?
Matt apparently has spaghetti in his pubes.
Spaghetti!
These guys are just all like, oh, fucking chicks.
Fuck you. You're a goddamn communist. I'm a fucking Reagan-era fucking conservative.
These guys suck worse than their moms.
Dustin, you have the cleanest pubes.
Oh, retards are stupid. You know, black people are going to hell.
You ruined it with your conservative talk and, like, don't ban this ammunition and all this other stuff.
I just can't stand this shit, you know? Like,
okay, how many times are you going to say Jerry Jonestown Massacre, okay? That is ridiculous. It was like a drinking game.
Well, you know what? I'm tired of going out shooting guns with you. I've played your games long enough.
They're racist bigots.
I may be pregnant with one of y'all's babies.
You were on JJTM. Hey, guess what? I remember you were on JJTM. Remember when you were on JJTM and you did this and...
Unlistenable liars that think retards are stupid, and I quote...
I'm gay, okay? And all I want is somebody to fucking love me.
Also, they don't mention sports.
Little dicks look funny. They always all make right. me laugh.
Their name is Jerry Jonestown Massacre.
JJTM, Jerry Jonestown Massacre. JJTM, JJTM, JJTM.
All I want is somebody to fucking love me, man. I just want love and ammunition.
Live from the Temple of High, it's the Jerry Jonestown Massacre!
Show number 123. 123.
That's weird.
That is. And the guest we have in tonight, it's taken 123 episodes to get them in.
Wow.
You think we'll make it to 321?
To 321?
Yeah, show 321.
Is that where we kill it?
We just off ourselves.
We just kill the show.
Yeah.
That's the last show is 321.
Yep.
So, happy Tuesday, Matt.
Happy Tuesday, Dustin.
How are you doing this Tuesday?
I'm good. I'm giddy.
I kind of am too.
Rock and roll royalty in here.
I'm giddy for two reasons. Not only the guest we have tonight, but this is Jerry Jones' birthday.
Oh, really?
He is 73 years old.
Damn.
The namesake of this show.
Dude, that's a hard 73, I bet.
Question came up earlier is, when he dies and the family starts fighting over the rights to the Cowboys and everything around here, it did. Is it going to be amazing watching them fight over his legacy, his property?
You don't think that's all planned out already?
It probably is, but don't you think all the kids have some little stake in it going... Well, I'm supposed to own the Cowboys. No, I'm supposed to own the Cowboys. He told me I could own the Cowboys.
Does any of them want them now? Right now?
No. I'd sell them.
Are we going to do another sports-heavy show?
No. This is not sports-heavy. That's okay. As heavy as sports I want to get.
Okay.
So, I thought that was kind of an interesting topic when he dies.
Yeah?
What's going to happen?
I've actually heard he's already dead, and they just cut open his skin and inserted a monkey into it. And just walks around in his skin.
And so the hip replacement surgery is all an excuse?
It's all bullshit.
Yeah, it is.
It's all
bullshit.
It is a monkey walking around in dead Jerry Jones skin.
I'll go with that.
Okay, good.
Let's get that
and
going.
So when the monkey
I'd pay money
dies,
to see that.
Are they going
to
have hologram Jerry?
Maybe.
Great success.
Yeah. Yeah. So I'm giddy. Go ahead. Tell the boys and girls who's here.
Well, let's just do this. Let's start on the... my left side of the room,
mm-hmm.
with our first guest. You can introduce yourself. Go ahead, sir.
Hi, my name's Tony Diaz. I'm with Panther City Exchange, and we put events on all over the place.
He knows how to put videos on Facebook.
He does. Once in a while. Yeah.
He has an amazing event coming up this weekend, which we are going to dissect piece by piece here in a little bit.
Nice.
Next up, we have...
I can't even edit our own Wikipedia page, so I have like zero internet skills. Other than that, I am Peter Thomas with Slow Roosevelt.
Yeah! Nice.
All right. And then, sitting next to you in the Seth chair, the guy that actually edits the Wikipedia page.
I don't know how to edit it either. I barely knew how to make a Facebook post for tonight.
What's an email?
I am Tony. I am the monkey in the slow Roosevelt suit.
Nice. Nice.
I see some badass flyers coming up for y'all. Yeah. Some you in a monkey suit.
Oh, yeah.
No, monkey
skin. Or a monkey skin slow suits. Roosevelt.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then us, a JJTM with Jerry Jones being controlled by a monkey.
Yeah.
I like that.
That'll be amazing. Think we can get Ray on that?
Yeah. He'd draw it up.
Totally.
Dude, Ray would knock that out so fast.
So what in the world have you guys been up to? What's been going on with y'all, man?
Really, honestly, absolutely nothing.
I love it when people come in and
say
that.
Yeah, since the band broke up many years ago, we have taken our time off very seriously.
Mm-hmm.
And occasionally we get back together for a couple of reunion shows. We did the grand opening of Trees back in 2008. And every now and then, whenever we're really desperate for money or we need our ego stroked again, we'll put together a reunion show and put ourselves back out there.
Yeah, got to pimp yourself every once in a while.
Yeah, you know.
Now it's Tony Diaz stroking our egos.
Yes. I try to stroke it really well. I'm a stroker. It's weird.
The first time I ever saw Slow Roosevelt was at Rick's in Denton.
Wow.
And I remember every once in a while I'd see you walking around campus.
Mm-hmm.
And did you graduate?
Yeah, I did. I did. I graduated with a couple degrees. So
did you?
Yeah.
Well, I remember.
He didn't.
Yeah, I did. So. But I just remember going to Rick's and being nut to butt. And I remember every band in the world that saw Slow Row play was like, "That's what I want." Like every band I was in was like, "That's what I want." The chaos. The nasty smells of all the people packed in, and just the whole package was like, that's what we want. When did you see him first?
Shoot, I remember Engine Room shows and Paula shows.
Yeah.
Shows with Cock, shows with Plastic Tongue.
Yeah.
Yeah, the whole one ton. Those showcases. God.
Way back. I don't even know what the first show was.
Yeah.
So you guys
have
been...
I can't think.
You guys have made a big impression on this little town, man. Yeah, like I said, we had, 20 people saying, hey, can we come in and hang out? We just want to touch Pete.
We just want to... We want to place our eyes upon him.
That is so creepy.
It's like you're the local version of the Pope or something. Yeah. It's kind of weird.
That's what y'all need, man.
I have no magical powers.
Will you kiss my baby?
We need a Pete-mobile.
Yeah.
That's what he cruises around town in.
However, I did meet privately with Kim Davis.
Oh.
Yeah. Wow. And I kicked her right in the nuts.
There you go. Yeah.
I knew she had nuts. I knew it.
Was this before or after the Pope?
During.
During. Same time. Like, screw what this old man says. Bam. Just kick him right.
So, man, where are all the guys at? Where's everybody living and hanging out? And
We are far and scattered. Bass player is out in L.A., and he is he actually does acupuncture.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. He got his acupuncture degree a couple of years ago, and so he's been out there practicing on his own. The drummer, Aaron, is actually playing right now at the State Fair of Texas on the Miller Lite stage. So if you happen to be near the Cotton Bowl, stop by and go kick him in the nuts.
Is he in a Red Dirt Country Bander?
You know, I don't know who he's playing with tonight because he whores himself out. As well he should, because he's
a badass.
He's a talented guy, man.
Mm-hmm.
And then our guitar player, Scott, he's been playing with a band called Generator.
Okay.
And then myself, I've been up in McKinney. I actually, after I graduated, I decided to go work, and I'm a licensed psychologist.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm in practice out up in McKinney now. So.
See, I knew that. I knew when I was going to school up at UNT, someone told me that that's what he was doing, what he was working towards. And I was always I always wondered, well, the slow roll lyrics, are they, is he like in my head and kind of, is he diagnosing me, man?
Trying to control you, like where's he's
my
the monkey?
Where's my medication and stuff? Whoa. So that's cool, man. So you've done that since, how long have you been practicing psychology?
I've been doing therapy and DFW now since like 95, really. Mm-hmm. I was even doing that during some of the slow road time when we weren't on the road. I was working at a private psychiatric hospital and to be able to kind of make a living. And
yeah
I
bet you got some stories, man.
I've got stories,
man. You just can't disclose them because
I can't disclose
HIPAA laws.
But let me tell you, they are really awesome stories.
I gotta tell you that I'm a huge fan of Slow Roseville, and I'm glad that you guys are here. And I got to tell you that I have some issues with my mother that I need to maybe have you guys start. No? Okay.
Well, secretly, we have a couch sitting outside. We're just going to roll in here.
That's what the show's going to be. He's going to diagnose each one of us.
We're going to have Matt lay down.
And, dude, he'd have me in a straitjacket before the end of the show. So that's cool, man. The thought of seeing your therapist rocking out on stage is... Is it disturbing or awesome?
That brings up an interesting question. Do you promote shows to your patients?
No. That's the last group of people you want to show up in your audience. But yeah, I do work a lot with musicians, and I work a lot with musicians around the Deep Ellum area and stuff, and because I know exactly, you know, how fucked up we are.
Yeah.
Hey, everybody, how you doing? No, I'm serious. How
Hello.
You doing?
Yeah.
How you doing?
Yeah.
So working with creative types of people and things like that, I've been doing that for a while now. And especially, I mean, I'm sure everyone's heard, you know, with the rash of suicides with musicians that has gone around over the last couple of years and stuff like that. And
so do you have like a genre or niche? Do you like child psychology, or do you just do everyone?
Mainly adolescents, and then like creative arts people. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's very neat.
That's pretty awesome. Do you take United Healthcare?
I do. Take, all right. I take UBH, man.
I'll make the drive to McKinney. That's awesome.
So you guys are so spread out. How's the logistics of this, of when you guys get together and rip through some slow row tunes? How's it all work?
It is a pain in the ass.
Yeah.
Because, you know, one guy has to fly in from L.A. You know, I've got to come in from McKinney. Somebody's got to come in from Fort Worth.
Mm-hmm.
You know, try and find a central location to really kind of do this all at is always a nightmare. But, you know.
Make it happen.
We pull it off. We do it, man.
Well, it's been almost a calendar year since the Grotto Show.
Yeah, which is weird because we kind of promised ourselves we'd do it like once every couple of years. So this is like a quick turnaround for us to get back out there and kind of do this again. But when we heard about the Rec Room revival, we were like, oh, yeah, we'll do that. Yeah, because really the whole Rec Room thing, that was a big part of this band and a big part of the vibe. We just absolutely loved being at that club.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just such a big part of our Fort Worth presence that it was fun to jump back on this for sure.
Big kudos to Tony Diaz and Panther City Exchange for putting this together.
This is going to be one of the coolest music events probably of the year. Wouldn't you say, Dustin?
Yeah.
Like people have to get out to this.
So we're going to go down the lineup a little bit, but every time I look at the lineup and the days and times and everything, I feel like I'm re-energized going, oh shit, I didn't realize they were playing. Oh my gosh. Oh God.
Well, some
and then
of the
I start
names,
thinking of who's all in what band, and I'm like, oh God, this is going to be amazing.
That's yeah, some of the names you haven't seen, and you're like, oh, I totally forgot that band was around.
So let's go over here to Tony. How long have you been putting this thing together?
We actually started in, I'm going to say, end of January. We started getting all the pieces together and contacting folks, and it's been a long, drawn-out process, and a lot of bands that were in at certain times and then they fell off shortly after, and you know, certain sponsors that were in, and then they were like, yeah, we're not gonna do it, no thanks. It's been really, really, really cool to kind of revisit all the people that were involved in the Rec Room in the scene, and kudos and thank you again to Slow Roseville for being a part of this. This is gonna be, it's, you guys are such a huge important part of what the Rec Room was. Absolutely. As many other bands, but man, it's really cool. You guys are the linchpin for Saturday night, but there's a lot of really cool bands that are playing that aren't necessarily in the incarnation that they were whenever the Rec Room was around, but in their new incarnation, they have been able to imbue a lot of their old sound. Take for instance the Ho Chi Minh. The Ho Chi Minh is comprised of most of the members of Spot, and we snagged them, and they're going to play some Spot tunes and of course some Ho Chi Minh stuff like that. But we had Sunday Drive, who eventually became RTB2, and RTB2's playing, and RTB2 actually played the Rec Room quite a lot. It's really really cool because you have bands that are still around that are going to play the Rec Room revival, and then you have members of other bands that have gotten together that are going to play some of the songs in the bands that they play when they play the Rec Room. So
this big thing, is this a task that you took on by yourself? How many people do you have helping you out with this bad boy?
There are five members of Panther City Exchange, and then we have various folks that help us out for different events. Sometimes we sublet the work out, and sometimes most of the time we do the work ourselves and stuff like that. I did all the booking. But and the members are Nick McClanahan, Gina Garner-Lewis, Christopher Lewis, and Bird Burris, and myself. And we all have different roles in which we take on legal stuff and logistics stuff. And it's just kind of a big moving machine with little intricate parts and stuff like that are able to put events like this together. And everybody did a kick-ass job getting this all together. And then, you know, we even have day-of-show folks that we have as far as volunteers and people that get people on and off the stage in a timely manner. It's a lot of different moving parts under the roof, but man, it's actually we've come into our own this year, and this is our linchpin event so far. So,
yeah, I can't wait. Can't wait.
So, what other events have you guys done?
Well,
in the past year.
Well, this year we involved ourselves obviously in the KFTW, the Pirate Radio sign-on show, which was really big with John and Sally Rohde. It was really, really awesome to work with them. It was our first event with them, and we raised a lot of good money and got a lot of local folks involved into turning that station on. And they're really, really awesome how they focus on a burgeoning Fort Worth music scene. And they also work with a lot of locally owned and operated businesses and stuff like that who do feature shows on their radio station. It's very Fort Worth centric, but that was their MO from the beginning, and we were more than being Panther City Exchange, we were more than welcome to help them get that going. We also helped out with Exhibitionists, which is a lot of the employees of the modern and a lot of the museums of the Museum Row there over there in Fort Worth. They showed their art as artists at Shipping and Receiving. And wonderful, wonderful showcase of a lot of really, really cool art. And we imbued a lot. We got to book a lot of good bands, including Def Rain and all kinds of folks like that. And then, of course, Arts Goggle. We booked all the music for Arts Goggle in Fort Worth. And now we're here.
Which was last week.
That was right? Last week. So my voice is gone. And so is any semblance of being awake. I'm very, very tired.
When do you get to rest?
I don't. Actually, my girlfriend, Adderall. Melissa, completely is like, when are you going to have me and you time? I'm like, we just did. That was like, what, 20 seconds? We did it. That's it.
Yeah, we ate a waffle.
It's October, don't you?
It only takes you 20 seconds,
20
Tony?
Seconds, that's
come
about
on,
I am
40.
That's about my length of time, too. Man.
That's what you said.
That's not what I meant, but I am 44. So there we are. No, no. I try and squeeze as much time as I can at home along with this, and which makes me just completely stretched ridiculously thin, but luckily I have a really, really cool team to work with that take on a lot of different tasks, and we get it done. So I'm looking forward to this one, and then after this one we have Fort Worth Rock Assembly, which has kind of become a standard in Fort Worth, and it takes a lot of local bands, and they take on the persona of a classic rock band.
And that's 3 weeks after this
one. Yeah, that's
right?
3 weeks after this one. So
another Lola's Takeover.
Another
that's
Lola's
completely
Takeover.
Completely insane.
And that's actually become really super popular, and a lot of folks have glommed onto that, and it's taken on a form of its own. And we thank people like Red Empire, Lindsay Cole of Red Empire, who's booked the show now for 2 years in a row. And a lot of really interesting takes on classic rock. I mean, mm-hmm. artful takes and literal takes and man, but all of it is ridiculously talented and super, super fun, and everybody has a great time at the Rock Assembly. So it's November 6th, 7th.
There's been other kind of people that have mimicked the whole thing, and it's kind of been a local music thing now. You get into the fall season, you do a cover set.
Yeah, you know, The Weekly did a story on that last year about a lot of different events that are going on that are these kind of like homages to classic rock or you know, other bands and cover shows or tribute shows and stuff like that. And it was really, really cool to focus on that. I'm hoping that doesn't go the way of the Dodo, at least the interest of it doesn't go the way of the Dodo. And we started in 2012, and it seems to have been picking up steam every year. And I think we need next year, though, we need to do a variation on this thing. We need to switch it up a little bit and do something a little different.
Yeah.
Just to kind of reinvent ourselves and kind of breathe new life into it, because I think the formula that we're in right now, I think eventually it's not going to be as durable as it has been in the past few years.
Well, now, Tony, did I forget to tell you that Slow Roosevelt's doing a complete NSYNC set on Saturday night?
Well, that's what I
wasn't aware
ask.
Of that. I was wondering why you guys were going to be wearing the Doc yeah. Martens and the Poet shirts. And
that's what I was going to ask. Have y'all done a cover set?
No.
Has the Slow Row ever done that? It's not really been y'all's thing.
I don't think we've even ever done a cover song.
Yeah,
you
have.
Oh, yeah. You've Hot done for two. Teacher. Oh, Hot for Teacher.
Well, then I believe I'll be teacher, asking you guys. Right.
We also did
Grease Lightning.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Grease Lightning was recorded, or was it Hot for Teacher
that was
recorded?
It was only Sandy Does Dallas.
Sandy Does Dallas.
And then,
oh, yeah.
What was the other one?
So we've done some really strange, bizarre.
Yeah.
Have you ever played them live?
You purposefully have found the strange
Hot for Teacher
ones,
we though. Have, yeah. Mm-hmm. And we played, I think we did Grease Lightning once live for the promo show.
Please tell me you did the whole go Grease Lightning.
Where you point the finger and kind of move it across the horizon line like that.
Yeah.
I do that anyway.
Yeah.
You know, I just,
so what would Slow Roosevelt do? What would a good Slow Roosevelt cover set be? What could you see them doing?
It's got to be completely like... left field, though. Like,
well,
that's because you know, it would be cool,
like Elton John.
Oh my God, y'all will destroy Elton John.
It would be a full Sanjaya.
Yeah.
Cover set, I think.
Robin Singh car.
Awesome. Yeah. Some Chicago.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Completely random.
Air Supply.
Yeah, come on, Slow Roosevelt. Air 25 or 6-4.
Yeah, there you go.
Come on. I'm all out of love.
Man, getting back into Slow Roosevelt, I've always wanted to know whose baby is Slow Roosevelt? When did it all start? When did you guys, was it in high school? Or?
Well, number one, it was before the internet.
Yeah,
but it actually started with the bass player and the drummer, and those cats were playing together for about a year, and then they found the guitar player, and then they were looking for a singer. They tried a couple guys out, and nothing was really working at all. And the bass player saw me on the streets of Deep Ellum one night and recognized me from previous band I'd been in called Last Rites.
Mm-hmm.
And he had asked me to come out and kind of jam with them. And, you know, honestly, I did not take it seriously because I'd never thought about metal. I'd never thought about, you know, anything.
What was Last Rites like?
Last Rites was like, it was a combination of like alternative and funk.
But it wasn't wheelhouse of metal.
It wasn't, you know, some of the songs were a little bit more harder edge, but it was all this kind of like pre-Chili Peppers type rock, and then the Chili Peppers came around and ruined it for me. Mm-hmm. But it was like that. It was like kind of punk rock mixed in with, and then we'd do a funk song. And mm-hmm. back in the old punk rock days, there was this great band called the Big Boys, and the Big Boys would play a punk rock song, you know, just fast 4/4 beat, and then they would kick into this kind of blues, or they kick into this kind of like funk, and they'd add horns to it. And it was this great kind of dichotomy of those two genres, and Last Rites was kind of like that as mm-hmm. well too. And that was its own kind of entity back in the days of Calk and When Brutal Juice was, you know, still kind of around, and then Slow Roosevelt came around after that, and you know, I think the first couple of years in Deep Ellum, it was a project that really just kind of floundered for a little bit,
mm-hmm.
and then with the help of One Ton and kind of getting the music out there, it really took off and it skyrocketed so quick,
mm-hmm.
And it was so fast, and it just kept snowballing and kept snowballing into what it became into.
Did you know you were a part of something special then with the whole One Ton? Because that was a really all-star label with Kalk, Dusu, you guys.
Know,
and
it's something you never really know until you look back on it.
Mm-hmm.
During that time, we knew that we were special to each other, and it was a really nice camaraderie, a group of people. But, you know, you really don't see it for what it is until like 10, 20 years later when you look back on it and you kind of see it for what it turned into and, you know, and what part of the scene it was. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, you hear people talk about it and you hear people kind of reflect on it and reminisce about it. And that's when you really kind of begin to kind of understand.
Mm-hmm.
I think a lot of times people are like, yeah, I knew, you know, I felt it. It was a big part of this. And I always think that's bullshit. Because I don't think you really ever know until retrospect.
Yeah. So when your first big show with Slow Roosevelt, you get on stage and I don't know. So did you know you were going to be a good metal frontman, or
I had no idea.
Nervous, or
you know, I think at first again, I didn't take the band very seriously because I didn't know what it was going to be, so I wasn't nervous at all. And one of the first shows we ever had was actually out at Dallas City Limits.
Mm-hmm.
Damn!
Oh, wow.
Yeah,
wow!
Way back in the day at Dallas City Limits, and I came out to the show with my girlfriend, and she was wearing this fur coat. And I was like, hey, let me borrow that. And so I put on this fur coat and came out on the stage. And the rest of the guys in the band were like,
what is he doing?
Are you going to wear that? And I was like, yes, I am going to wear this. And immediately just started to sweat and stuff and played the show. And it was just... it was just weird, and I think I was trying to piss everybody off. I think I was, you know...
kind of being an antagonist on stage.
Which is, you know, that's kind of my tagline, I think, all the way along through, is to be the antagonist, but...
Was there a megaphone at this
time? No, there wasn't. There wasn't. Okay. I think the megaphone didn't come along until a little bit later, you know, and to a lot of those guys, that was something new, too, even though, you know, the megaphone had been around for years with bands like the Butthole Surfers,
yeah,
bands like Season of Risk and things like that from Kansas City. So the megaphone, you know, it's not an original or novel or new idea by any means, but to bring it into that particular scene and genre, I think when I first did that, they were very wary of it. You know,
that was so awesome.
It was weird, but it worked.
So the funny thing is the megaphone is currently in a glass case.
Yeah, let's get into
the State Fair of Texas that we have to pick up before the show.
Now,
yeah. Saturday.
Wow! Is this
I
the
am
one?
So honored.
Is this the exact the same megaphone that Alex Gerst delivered to the Grotto
secretly?
On
yes,
it is. Okay,
it is. Yeah, but it's not the original megaphone. No. I've actually been through a couple.
Well, I would imagine.
Yeah,
I mean, it's
yeah, all those megaphones have been through really complete hell. But the last original one that we used at our final farewell show back in 2005, that one was torn in half and ended up on eBay. And there was one guy, I think, who posted to the Facebook page that he had one half of it, but I have no idea where the other original half has gone to. That's gone.
Do you know what it went for on eBay? Anybody?
Oh,
anyone know?
It wasn't anything spectacular. It was like maybe 70, 120 bucks or something.
Really?
Yeah.
Damn.
Oh, man. That's more than I've ever made on eBay.
You destroyed that, and Phil Roosevelt never had any intentions of reuniting. And so two years later, we're like, what the hell are we going to do?
Yeah. So let's talk. You brought something up. Let's talk about this. So these guys are being displayed right now at the Texas State Fair.
I'm going on Sunday, and I'm I'm gonna go check this out.
Oh, it's
right
awesome.
On, right on, yeah.
I'm gonna go stand in the same pose Alex did in his picture.
Yeah.
With his like this standing next to him. Except so, I'm gonna say I didn't produce any of these guys' records.
What man, Pete, what was it like when you got asked about did they ask you, hey, do you wanna be in this display?
Yeah, it was great, man. It's such an honor to be out there with so many other bands that, you know, are deservedly there, and I'm still kinda wondering, you know, why are we there?
How did that happen? How did it come up?
They contacted us through our Facebook page. It turns out later on, I had known one of the guys who had worked on the actual display for the NFL showcase that was there last year. And so he was kind of helping them kind of get in contact with me. They contacted us and they were asking, hey, we need, you know, any stuff that you have that is three-dimensional. We don't want flats. We don't want anything. And I was just like, oh, you know, I've still got one of the old black suits with the Reservoir Dogs tie and all that stuff. And we've got the megaphone, and you know, maybe we can yank that picture out of Curtain Club.
Is that where that picture is from?
Yeah.
That's what I thought. Yeah, that's what I thought.
It's one of their plaques.
Yeah. It's Kay Booth's picture. And if you've ever been in Curtain Club before, mm-hmm. you see all those paintings hanging up there. Mm-hmm. And so, funny story about that painting is when we were asking for it, they took it down and they were looking at it. And it was like someone put some graffiti on there, and someone had written the term fag on my forehead on the painting. And then I was like, you know, I think I did that.
And he looked at me and said, yes, I was there.
Like about 10 years ago, I think so. Awesome. So they had to send it back to Cave to get touched up so we could put it in the display case for a family-friendly environment, one that didn't have a derogatory term like that on my forehead. So
I can faintly make out the word.
Don't look at me.
So when did they come? When did they contact you with Facebook? It was like, how long ago?
It was actually just a couple weeks before it all happened. It was kind of a word of mouth, and they were definitely helping out the band. And I was trying to put him in touch with Drowning Pool and Pantera as well too, to kind of get some more representation of Texas metal out mm-hmm. there, because a lot of what they had before was Texas country. You know, they had it's a great display if you haven't been by it, but you know, Stevie Ray Vaughan and Tanya mm-hmm. Tucker, and you know, all these great country bands out there too. They're like the Light Crust Doughboys, mm-hmm. you know, all that good stuff. But they were really looking to kind of round it out, and so, you know, we did everything we could to help out.
So is your acupuncture guy going to make it in early to go check it out, or
He's in town tonight, so hopefully he will go out there and check it out.
You think all the guys have seen it by now? Or?
You know, I'm pretty sure the drummer has, because he's playing out there every night this week.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. He probably takes people over there.
Yeah, yeah.
Hey, look at this.
Yeah.
Who else is around you guys in that display? Like, what other bands are right around you guys?
The Drowning Pool one is real close by to us.
Did they keep all the metal together, or did they kind of spread out?
You know,
it's
kind of spread out. It's kind of, so you really got to kind of walk around the whole place to really get a good sense of what's out there. But like, they've got a guitar from Buddy Holly. They've got one of his jackets out there. A lot of Stevie Ray Vaughan. They've got a bathrobe that Rex wore from Pantera.
That's got to be stinky.
Yeah. And they've got Drowning Pool. Tony actually donated the shovel that Dave used to bang on stage out there, and they've got some of their I think one of their platinum albums in the display case too, with some other stuff that that Stevie had put out there for us. So yeah,
it's actually kind of cool, because the Drowning Pool and the Slow Roosevelt displays, I think I'm biased, of course, but I think they're the coolest displays out there. I think there's some really cool stuff in there. Reel-to-reel tapes inside the Slow Rose case. Nice.
Yeah, we have the original Starving Saint Nick reel-to-reel tape out there, which I'm hoping hasn't been exposed to any magnets.
How did you? Did you just handed that over to him? Or?
What's that?
the reel to reel. Did you guys just give it to him or
yeah
like,
yeah
very much insured.
Well,
wow. Is it very much so?
Oh, I was about to say.
Yeah, it's very much insured and all that stuff. So I'm actually kind of hoping that they lose it.
So they can pay you.
Because we have it insured for.
We're rich.
It's all digital now. It's all on digital anyway. I was like, yeah, this is.
They insured my drowning pool snow shovel for $666.
Yeah, and the megaphones insured.
Are you joking or?
Through Christie's.
Are you dead serious?
No, I'm dead serious.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
It's, wow. It's all very, very
insured. Wait. It was really through Christie's?
No.
Wow.
It was paperwork and it's all insured and stuff.
Okay. You guys were part of a legendary event that happened one night in local music and it had to do with meat hooks.
Good Lord.
Go on.
Let's talk about when that happened that night. What was going through you guys? When that all happened, what were you thinking at that point? We were like, we're gonna get sued. Or
well, yeah. let me tell you, it was disclose what happened.
Yeah, okay, yeah. So go ahead and tell the story.
I think the first time we did this was at Trees, right?
So, but back up a second.
Yeah,
because I went to a fashion show with a girl I was dating.
Okay,
and these guys were hanging from hooks above the runway, the runway.
It was called Traumatic Stress Discipline, which was a group of suspension artists.
Yeah.
Which they still do stuff around here?
Is that where they have the rings in their back and then they just do that?
Yeah. So then I'm at Clearview one night and a mutual friend introduces me to somebody and I'm just small talking and said, what do you do? I hang from hooks. And I go, were you those guys? And he goes, yes, that was us. And all of a sudden, the biggest freaking light went off in my head and I was like,
"Right,
oh my God, you're hanging above Slow Roosevelt for the next show." And I called Pete and the guys and they're like, oh yeah, we're gonna do that.
Sure. Not knowing what we were getting ourselves into, because what these guys do is that they will pre-show they will pierce the flesh in their backs and with hooks, and then they will wire the hooks and suspend themselves from the ceiling, and they will thrash around and they will swing back and forth.
They will pick you up while you're singing.
Yeah. And so Tony's so great idea was to have them, to perform above us while we play the show.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're at Trees and, hours before they're trying to get the rigging to work and get everything all hooked up. And so, and we're not really too sure exactly kind of what to expect with all this. And so, we opened up the show and
we started them on the ground.
Yeah. And as soon as the lights came on the stage, they get hoisted up and it's them. It's we're not even on the stage yet. And these cats are out there just kind of hanging and they're just kind of looking at you and the crowd's kind of looking back and the crowd's going, what the fuck is that? And we're kind of like about to take the stage and we're like, what the fuck is that? And so we come out and these guys, they're swinging and they're going back and they're swinging over the crowd. And I'm wondering, okay, am I going to get blood on me? What's going to happen with all this? And before I know it, they're picking me up with their legs and we're swinging out over the audience.
Good Lord.
And people are grabbing my legs. Crazy. And I'm thinking to myself at that moment, I was like, this will never happen to me again.
But
I'm
you were
swinging
wrong.
Over a crowd of people, being suspended by some guy who has hooks pierced in his flesh.
And they didn't mention this at all to you beforehand that they were going to do this to you.
Kind of ad lib, and I just kind of went with it. And it was just, it's one of the most surreal moments of my life is just kind of being out there swinging over people attached by someone's flesh. With the reactions we had from people, we had people who were leaving the building because it made them sick.
Yeah.
We have other people who are rushing the stage, who are trying to grab onto them too. It was all sorts of different type of reactions to that. But it was very successful and it got a lot of press and, before we knew it, we're doing it a couple more times too. So
now you mentioned the fear of getting sued.
Right.
So the second time we did it was at Curtin Club.
Is this the incident?
This is the incident.
The rigging breaking.
Yeah. So okay, yeah.
I'm upstairs having a good old time. Slow Roosevelt's on. My work is done for the night. And all of a sudden, the rigging breaks on one of the guys and starts kind of coming down. And yes, he partially ripped out. Rigging comes down, hits this kid in the head. So I'm freaking out. I'm like, oh my God. So I grab the kid, get him fixed up, take him straight to the merch booth, give him one of everything.
Right.
And I'm like, are you okay? Are you okay? Here's his response. That was the coolest fucking thing ever.
Yeah, there it is.
And I'm like, okay, go get out of here.
That was, Dustin, that was actually me.
Yeah, it was
He came up running probably towards the end of the set, and he had this big gash in his head, and he was, you know, up front saying, look at my head, look at my head. Wow. Just bleeding. There's more blood coming out of him that was coming out of the guy who was suspended. So,
Man.
Pretty nuts. I remember when I heard about that, and the rumors were like the guy just ripped everything, and he was just like, there's blood everywhere. See,
those are good rumors.
Yeah.
That's exactly what happened.
Oh, sorry. Always far from the truth. I think one or two of the hooks from the back tore out, but you know, it didn't really tear too much.
He
was bleeding some, but it's mainly the rigging that kind of snapped and broke. And
I don't even remember what happened on stage because I was so busy taking care of this kid that got hit. I don't even remember what you guys did and how you reacted.
I think most of us passed out,
vomited maybe.
It was pretty intense.
Have you seen the kid since then?
You know, I haven't seen, but I definitely hear that he's doing well. He now has a lot of babies, and maybe they suspend together.
So any thoughts of bringing the suspension back for one of these reunion shows?
Well, it just so happens, guys, that
Dustin Diaz
will be suspending.
I think
we
most
got some
of those
mannequins that we're going to be suspending.
I think most of those guys now are probably around my age, so if you suspend hooks in the flesh in their back, it's just going to sag, and they're just not going to get off the ground any.
They're attached to a bag of some sort.
And you do have the low ceilings of Lola's, so by the time you stretch it all the way out, they're still on the ground.
Yeah. Brian and Ryan, I promise this isn't going to happen. Quit sweating. Quit sweating.
All these endorsers are backing out now.
Oh, my God.
Well, that was fun. We're out.
That's crazy. Okay, so y'all did the grand reopening of Trees.
Yeah. Man, that was incredible.
And then was that the last show until the Grotto show last year?
Yeah.
No.
Oh, did we have other shows? See how quickly I forget.
We did one at Curtain Club on
New Year's Eve where the power went out. But yeah,
that's right.
Yeah,
didn't the power always go out at New Year's
Eve?
It always does.
But that's Deep Ellum for you.
Every single year, the Vietnamese restaurant would hand out Mylar balloons.
Yeah,
and they would go up and trip the power out in Deep Ellum.
Yeah, yeah, which is God. It's kind of a staple in Deep Ellum on New Year's Eve, if you know. But the whole Tree show, man, it was just absolutely incredible. And when Trees was opening back up, you know, it was just like, you know, hey, there's another piece of history that we really want to be a part of. And playing that show, and it was a packed house, and there's such, you know, there was a huge line out front, and you know, it was just the whole atmosphere of people getting back into Trees again, and seeing an old band from really back in the heyday again. And it was just, the whole vibe was just an incredible night.
Man, what was it like the first time where, say, at Trees, or you just saw the kids and the way they reacted to you, and it just all hit? Like, everybody's jumping up and down. And
yeah.
Like, what was that like when you just saw it and you realized, we're good at this?
Thanks. I think stuff like that starts to hit you, like, when the kids are out there and, you know, everybody is jumping up and down, and everybody's starting to sing the song, and everybody knows the lyrics. And it's that point where I can, like, just pass the mic off to some guy in the front row, and I can go take a piss and come back later and pick up where he left off with singing. And, you know, and to really have the crowd to be that much a part of the show, there's absolutely nothing like that.
Right. That's what I remember. I remember those shows, man. Just seeing kids getting up, you know, singing along with Pete, and Pete acting like a madman.
We're trying to
tagging this.
Yeah, but
Pete
could absolutely
man.
Control the crowd.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So there's one time that somebody threw a Foster's can at Pete on stage, And he tells everybody in the crowd, first of all, get down on their fucking knees. And he starts saying, I want to know who threw this Foster's can.
Come on.
Damn it, if the person who threw the he says, oh, no, I want to give it back to you. And damn it, if the person who threw the Foster's can didn't raise their hand and stand up. And you know what he does? Threw the Foster's can right back at him.
It's that psychology working, man. It started working.
Crowd control.
Yeah, but a lot of times slow roll crowds are really responsive to what we're doing on stage. And, you know, it's not just necessarily crowd control. I mean, a lot of the crowd wants to be a part of the show, mm-hmm. and that's... That just fuels our energy when they're energized and we feed off of that. And it's just, you know, that's a great relationship to have where you have that type of connection with your crowd. And that's one of the things I really like about, you know, nowadays when we get back together and playing some of the smaller clubs where it's a lot more intimate of a venue. And you're right there. There's no, you know, there's no barricade, you know, where you've got to cross 12 or 15 feet to, you know, to be able to be a part of the crowd and right. Let the crowd be a part of the band. They're right there and they're getting pushed onto the stage and they're tripping all over the, you know, the pedals from the guitar player, or they're, you know, they're crushing the mic stand and bending it in half, and, you know, and to have them right there, you know, that's just a whole nother special connection again.
So would you say that the smaller intimate shows are more fun for you than opening for Kid Rock at Smirnoff?
Well, anything
you knew
more
I was gonna
fun
bring
than
that.
That
up.
Yeah. I was going to say.
Both I had to fun. Bring that up.
Yeah. Both are fun. Both are fun in their own way, and both are really unique experiences. I think nowadays, which one would I prefer? I honestly think I would prefer doing the smaller, packed venue where I'm sweating just as much as everybody else
right.
in the venue is. You know?
Well, that's what you're going to get Saturday night.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Packed and sweaty.
Lola's.
The good thing about Lola's, though, is Lola's has about 5 more inches on the stage than the Grotto did. So there's a little bit more of a shield.
Yeah.
And actually, the room is a little deceptive because you walk into Lola's empty and you're like, not a lot of people could be held in it. Ben,
oh no,
a lot of people can insane. Fit into this, especially yeah. in yeah. the main performance room. So
yeah,
let's start running down this set list.
Sure.
Of greatness that is going to be over here at Lola's this Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, all 3 days.
Yeah.
So you're starting at 7 p.m. on Friday.
Yeah, with a group called Impulse of Will. It's Lucas White and. And Leezer Lee, as he's known on Facebook, a friend of ours. He's these guys, they've incorporated a lot of different musicians just to kind of set. They played a lot at the Rec Room. It's very jam based, and it just kind of opens the festival up and gets everybody familiar with you know one of the staples of like, you know, like kind of like a jam night that would go on at the Rec Room.
Yeah,
we thought that's how we would start the festival off, just to kind of introduce folks to what we're the vibe we're trying to lay down, and people coming in, and a lot of folks are going to be familiar with Impulse of Will. And then we're starting then after that we got RTB2, which, man, those
his
guys
greatness.
Ryan Thomas Becker, that guy is he's amazing songwriter. Sally Majestic, which is a classic Fort favorite. And then my band Goodwin, I promise we're going to play for just a few minutes and we'll get off. Then then Garuda is going to play and then a Pinkish Black is going to play with have a lot of members of the band Ohm and different band.
That's going to be crazy.
Yeah. Is Pinkish Black going to do some new stuff?
Don't they? I'm
have
not
some
sure.
New, don't well, they have
the,
a new?
The new
album
comes out
on
the 30th.
Yeah,
their new album.
Yeah, they
comes
have
out.
Not told me what they're going to do.
I think they got a track on Spotify right now, don't they?
I think so. The Brown Rainbow.
Mm-hmm.
Hence the poster I saw earlier today. Yeah.
Yes.
They have a show with I can't remember who else it was, but there's a Brown Rainbow on it. Saturday. School of Rock of Fort Worth is going to be playing, and they're going to be playing some Rec Room favorites. They're going to be doing some Burden Brothers, and I told them they're going to be doing some like Chomsky and some Baboon and stuff like that. The kids are going to be covering that, which will be interesting to
see.
That's
pretty badass.
Yeah.
It was awesome.
A lot of the bands that weren't able to make the Rec Room Revival, they're kind of covering their spots where we're playing some of their songs. I thought that was really cool, and thanks to Andrew School of Rock. Mark Groudon is a singer-songwriter who currently lives in San Francisco, but he used to play the Rec Room a lot, and this guy plays accordion, he plays banjo, he plays guitar, he incorporates blues, he incorporates rock, soul. This guy has just got this really wonderfully
dark voice, and he's kind of a bard that basically at the Rec Room, he would go all around the club during his performance. He would stand on the bar and perform, and it was a spectacle. It was awesome, and his songwriting is phenomenal, and he's starting us off there at 5 o'clock, and he'll be playing in between the sets on Saturday and playing outside and just kind of doing what he did at the Rec Room at Lola's that night. Dove Hunter.
Speaking of Dusu.
Yeah.
Yeah. There you go.
And Dove Hunter also had members of Sub Oslo and who played at the Rec Room a lot, Quincy. And so we're really excited to have Dove Hunter play. The Methinks,
to talk to you about these guys.
The Methinks are basically, I saw on a post earlier this week, the Motorhead of Fort Worth. Nothing more accurate, I think.
They have that sticker, too.
Yeah.
Right there on the table.
I think. They are the Motorhead of Fort Worth, and they are awesome, amazing. It's straightforward, kick you in the nuts, rock and roll, man. And if it's Haltom City's best.
Yeah. It's 7 o'clock. Are they aware of this?
Yeah, I think they're aware of it.
The sun has barely set.
They're aware of it. There's a lot of beer that will be put on the stage for that set.
Keep the brownies away from them.
Actually, they played, I don't know if it was last year or the year before last, they played a show, and I don't know if it was a CD opening or it may have been one of their releases, where they put a bar on the stage at Lola's, and Graham Richardson was the bartender, and patrons were flowing up and down climbing up on stage and sitting at the two stools that were at the bar and watching the band. The band from behind the band, and Graham was your bartender.
Now
did he get tipped?
Yeah. Is he getting tipped that
three
night?
That was the three chili dog. That's it. The Gideons, man, this is Carl, the most crazy man bartender from the Rec Room. This guy, he is a one-legged wonder who headed up the Gideons, straight ahead, amazing punk band that was a favorite of the Rec Room. They actually were the last performance. Loud. They're really loud, and they were the last performance of the Rec Room before they shut down. And so it is completely fitting that they play this festival and destroy people's faces. And we're really excited to have them. Merkin. We have Leroy the Prophet. Thanks to Leroy for his work and help with promoting the show. And he's done ridiculous amounts of work getting this on all social media and getting the word out for this. We have the amazing Slow Roosevelt.
Who are they?
They're a polka band from Dallas, I heard. They're really, really good. They play a lot of bar polka mitzvahs. Are you doing bar mitzvahs now? Are you just sticking with bar mitzvahs? I'm wondering. No comment. It's a touchy subject. I apologize. and then we're closing the night with Ad Nauram. So that way it's a full Saturday, October 17th of
crazy
rock and roll.
Because Cosmic Trigger is playing with Red Fang.
But we're not supposed to talk about this apparently.
No, you're supposed to tell anybody.
Yeah, we're not
supposed to get into that.
Tyrell's going to have to drive from.
Yeah, I know. He's playing earlier that day. And then playing that night, that guy, if we can keep him awake, we're going to give him a lot of coffee instead of beer. Or coffee, yeah,
because he's not drinking right now. So
yeah, right.
Oh, he's still on the water kick.
He's on the water kick. So we're going to have to.
It's awesome.
We're going to have to find some caffeinated water for him so that he'll be able to play. Sunday, we have Tame and Quiet. These guys are really, really cool indie
rock band.
Yeah, they're really good. They've been around for a long, long time. And Goodwin's played with them several times. I remember we played at the, what was the bar where over by Fred's? I can't remember the name of it. Why can't I remember the name of the bar? We played a show with them over. It's in the same neighborhood as Fred's Cafe and down and over 7th. And it was the owner would only allow. He wouldn't even buy a sound system. He only had like a crate amp, and so a number of bands would play there, even though he only had a crate amp to power the sound. And I can't remember the name of the bar. If you remember, message the radio show. Jerry Jones
or the chat room here.
Or the chat room. Yeah, that's right.
Anybody remember?
Let's see. We have the Ho Chi Minh, which is, of course, Reggie Roofer and his troupe. And they, of course, played as Spot at the Rec Room. I remember playing with the Velvet Love Box and them at the show that they played at the Rec Room, which was really awesome. And, of course, Spot, who played in Deep Ellum for several years.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. And then Exit 380, man, Dustin Blocker and his group, Hand Drawn Records, They're the ones that created the splash page for the show. And, man, I can't thank Hand Drawn Records enough, and Dustin in particular, for doing so much promotion for the show. And Exit 380 is actually pulling out their old rock set. They do a lot. They do a tamer set now in their new incarnation, or same members, but their rock stuff they're bringing out particular for the show what they used to do at the Rec Room. Casey Hess and the Jump Rope Girls, which, man,
that's gonna be rad.
Yeah, I can't believe we got that. That is going to be incredible.
A Dusu consolation prize.
Yeah, that's it. We couldn't get them, and we said, "How about the Jump Rope Girls?" And I was like, "Okay, you got
two of the members there,
right? Yeah, that's it." It's like, yep. Jump Rope Girls, you are not cussing at me. That is awesome. Let's do this.
The Jump Rope Girls are on Sunday.
Yeah, they are on Sunday. Right. Carrie Wolf in the Morning After. Carrie Wolf, of course, is the lead singer of the Fort Worth famous Would I. And I think he's going to be performing some of those tunes. I think they do a few of those tunes. And, of course, his solo stuff they do in, obviously, in Carrie Wolf in the Morning After. But Carrie is going to be playing at 9 p.m. And then we have Benway. Benway, who played a lot of shows at the Rec Room, is playing then. And we're finishing the evening with Pablo and the Hemp Hill 7, a dance vibe. And by dance, I mean it gets your reggae on. This is the best reggae band in Dallas-Fort Worth. And, man, they're amazing. If you haven't been to one of their shows, it's a lot of women dancing. Lots.
Yes, and hula hoops. That's the weird thing. There's always hula hoops going on.
Sometimes there are. I haven't seen a lot of hula hoops at their shows lately. But they played the Rec. Lot of famous shows they used to play at the Rec Room, and we found it appropriate to end the evening with that.
It's gonna be awesome.
Yeah.
So the Gideons were the very last bands at Rec Room, but I was trying to think earlier who was on that last show. It was a big festival.
Man. Yeah, it was. It was a big festival.
And it was one of those basically FUs because they were going to tear the building down.
So I know William, and William Massey was there. William Massey III, who's a poet from Fort Worth. Mm-hmm. You've got to check his poetry out. It is, there's no holes barred. This guy kicks you in the nuts with his observations on life. And I remember he was there. Did the Methinks play the last day? I don't remember if they did or not.
They might have.
It was a whole weekend.
Methinks, did y'all play?
I thought they did. I wonder if it was the last day.
How come they're not answering us?
I know.
Methinks?
7-second delay.
That's it, Methinks. I don't remember who was on the last day. If you remember who played the last day of the Rec Room show, that's, I believe it was a
Marlon
Sunday.
Marlon says Last Rites was awesome.
There it is.
One of his favorite bands.
Nice.
Oh, he's got a YouTube link up too.
Yeah,
Marlon is in the Methinks. Ask him if they played the last day or was
he's not in here. Johnny Trash Pockets is in here, Brandon.
Oh, is Marlon, did he leave?
I don't see his name listed.
Marlon. Marlon.
Anyway, our buddy Red Pants is laughing at the video because you have long hair.
That's true.
Pockets says they played. He says they played it.
Oh. Pocket says they played, so they did.
They did? Well, yep. I'm going to have to, before now and Friday, I'm going to have to remember who played the last day of, actually the last weekend of the Rec Room, so we can do a little tribute to that weekend as part of all the tributes that we're going to be doing. I did mention that William Massey is going to be doing some poetry. Tammy Gomez was a poet who did a lot of stuff at the Rec Room. She's going to be doing some stuff. And, of course, we're going to have a lot of guest folks get up and they're going to share their memories of the Rec Room. We're going to do some tributes to some patrons like Cadillac Fraff and others who frequented and performed at the Rec Room several hundreds of times and were favorite of all of a lot of the staff and just Fort Worth in general. We're getting the show MC'd by Tom Urquhart and Chris Bellamy of The Good Show at KTCU, and also DJ Janice of Sputnik Radio Sputnik are going to get up because they did a lot of MC stuff at the Rec Room as well. So it's just kind of a big old memory fest of a club that actually was more important than just being a music venue. It was a launching pad for a lot of folks who do a lot of stuff in town, you know, for visual arts. And, you know, there was a lot of meetings that went on there and, you know, community driven type things that went on at the Rec Room. It was a facility for all those things that a lot of us used it for. And it helped to usher in kind of a movement that was going on, that was starting to happen in Fort Worth, that it was one of the big cogs that moved to help the music and art scene in Fort Worth that's going on today. So that's yeah. another reason why we're putting the show on. So
it's going
to
be awesome.
Big, huge tribute to the Rec Room.
So
many good shows there.
Man, amazing
Black
shows.
Black Tie Dynasty.
Yeah.
God, I remember what's the band Atlas. that has Satan's Cheerleaders? That has the cheerleaders that are all tatted out. Not the Lone Star Trio. It's
Strap?
No, not Strap.
Did they do that?
God. No, it wasn't them.
Okay, get on the chat.
I know what you're talking about.
You know what I'm talking about? They were kind of a rockabilly band.
Lone Star Trio was
Flame Trick Subs.
Flame Trick
yeah,
Subs.
Flame Trick that's it.
Yeah, and they had Satan's Cheerleaders.
Thank you, Red Pants. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I remember one of the cheerleaders at one of their shows at the Rec Room. There was some douchey dude that was hitting on one of the cheerleaders or whatever, and he was drunk off it. I mean, so drunk. And like, we were just, me and my friends were looking at this occur, and he's walking up to her, and he kind of puts his hand on his back like this, and you can tell her she's shrugging his hand off or whatever. She's trying to order a beer. And finally, she'd had enough, and she hauls off and hits him straight in the chest, and he falls down, and I was like, Rec Room.
That sounds like Slow Road. So, I got a question for Tony Edwards.
Go.
So you are doing the management, and did you started as a fan, I'm assuming, right?
Well, I worked for One Ton.
Oh, you did? With yeah. Aiden?
I
didn't know that.
Yep, Aiden and I were One Ton for the longest time.
Tony was a huge part of One Ton.
Well, thank you very much, Peter.
Were you the biggest part of One Ton?
Well, no, you've seen how tall Aiden is.
He was 900 pounds of One Ton.
Do you keep up with Aiden and them stuff?
I do.
What's Keith up to, the bass player?
Keith's here in town. I don't know what
Keith's up to. Yeah, he is.
But Keith and I just went out last year to Colorado and visited Aiden, went to the Riot Fest out there.
Oh, cool. Is that where Aiden's living, up in Colorado?
Denver. Yeah.
Is he still involved with music up there, or what's he doing?
He's still doing most of the graphic stuff, but mm-hmm. he does, there's a, what's it called, the Denver Underground Music Festival that a buddy, his Kendall runs. Great little festival in Denver if you're ever mm-hmm. up there for that. But, yeah, it was a blast working with Aiden. But, yeah, to answer your question, I was just a little kid, mm-hmm. a little college rep working for, a BMG distribution.
Mm-hmm.
And, I had a subscription to CMJ Magazine, and I went up to Aiden. And, hey, you want me to help you track radio airplay?
Right.
And so,
with that voice?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
totally.
Was that?
and then one day, Aiden called me up, asked me to work for him. And it was a blast. I mean, you were talking about the old One Ton days, and mm-hmm. it was, I don't know if I buy Pete's, bullshit description, because I think we all knew that there was something special going on.
Oh, yeah.
And we had One Ton showcases.
Yeah.
And
they were huge.
And you had Valve, Buck Jones.
Was that band from Oklahoma, Fixture?
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
And then you started having the Buzz Oven.
Then we started and Aiden and I did the Buzz Oven for a long time. Yeah. And that was a great experience.
Didn't the drummer for Kalk, the original, or was it the second drummer that ended up playing with the Goo Goo Dolls?
Mike Glennon.
Yeah. 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 And Mike was actually the drummer in Last Rites.
Oh, really?
Look
at this.
So that's how we all knew Mike. Yeah.
So my question for you is, what was the craziest, maybe off the wall thing you saw with these guys? Maybe not on stage, maybe on the road, butt cheese or
exclusive
nut cheese.
Let me take there's actually two things. One of them I'll post later.
Social media.
And this is back in the day before, big internet science was out there.
The interwebs.
We used to, after shows, go back to the One Ton offices in DeBellum, and we would hop on the computers there and have a LAN party.
Yes.
And we used to play Counter-Strike and Half-Life.
Counter-Strike!
To seriously, we would get done at 2 o'clock in the morning, and then we would go over to the One Ton offices.
Protect the VIP team.
Yeah, and we would be on the LAN, and we would play till about 8 o'clock in the morning after a show.
Bobby Maloney from the Jump Rope Girls was in on that.
Really? Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Team
Fortress action?
Yeah, Team Fortress, of course.
And really, one of the biggest parts of One Ton was
gaming?
Us getting together to play these games.
Yeah.
Yes. And it was awesome. It was
what a business model.
It was awesome.
But the One Ton offices were always in downtown. But whether it was, it kind of rotated back. The One Ton office was in Aiden lived in the 110 office. Then I lived in the 110 office. Then Aiden lived in the third 110 office. Mm-hmm. 110
office. Wasn't there an office over there in Dallas by the elbow room? Like right around the corner from the elbow room?
That's the one I lived in.
Yeah.
Okay. Oh,
yeah.
That office.
Yeah.
That was fun a cool fact office. Here. Tony Edwards, fun fact. That was one of the original Dallas Buyers Club's offices.
Oh, wow.
Really?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
It showed up.
That's cool.
It showed up in a D Magazine article, and Aiden sent us an email, and we were like, that's a little bit of history.
Yeah.
That's
crazy.
Dallas Buyers Club, 110 Records.
Absolutely.
That was a cool building and everything. Yeah. That was really cool. And everything was really cool.
Now, the other craziest thing we've seen is that our guitar player a long time ago found
this
video online.
It is not me.
of this guy who is laying on his back and has been able to manipulate his hips all the way up to his face and been able to basically choke himself with his own junk. And the guy, and I'll play this for you guys in a little bit. The guy looks exactly like Tony.
Wow. Tony.
Exactly Tony. Like Tony from Tony. Back in the day.
I Tony, promise you guys that if this was really me, you would have known about it a long, long time ago. Or you just never would have seen me again.
Yeah, it's exactly. If this was you, you never would have been a part of one time. No. You would have just been at home all day long.
All day long.
Raking in the money.
Giving yourself satisfaction.
Royalties.
Was that the
down royalties?
Was that the downfall of one time? Once streaming videos was able to happen on the internet, it just
Tony,
like,
why?
This record stuff.
Oh, yeah.
I can do this.
That was actually a big part of the one-ton in-house culture was this video
you know,
that went around.
But you did say something interesting earlier because you said about
I'm glad I'm saying something interesting.
Well, I'm stroking your ego. But the one-ton...
Not what I want you to stroke.
The one-ton message board.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Remember that?
This was
I do remember that.
Yeah. This was pre-MySpace. This was pre-everything.
Yeah.
And dude, if you wanted to know anything about... Before chat room.
Yeah.
Before, you know,
I used to hit that thing all the time, dude.
If you wanted to know anything that was going on in Deep Ellum, it was the one-time message board.
So you guys, y'all had a major part, or y'all played Fry Street a few times, right? What was that like? Do y'all miss that festival?
Yeah.
Fry Street was awesome, I thought.
Fry Street was such just a great... miraculous thing. I'm surprised Fry Street happened every year with all the chaos.
It was
that,
so fun.
And, you know, that was around it. But, you know, those guys pulled it off every single year, and it was just like you basically took Deep Ellum and you moved it north.
Mm-hmm.
And it was always bring your own beer.
Yeah, it was so awesome.
It was bring your own everything.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
It got insane up there.
Yeah, and Fry Street was just one of those festivals that was just... It was our festival. If you lived in North Texas, that was your festival. You own that. And that was just a big part. I mean, if you ever write the history book on North Texas music, that's several chapters right there.
Yeah. I wish there was some way they could just bring it back, but that's kind of why it's special too, though. It's not going to come back.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, man,
when was the last one?
Oh gosh. My band played a Fry Street redo, like before they tore down the Tomato and all that up there.
Mm-hmm.
And that was right around 9/11.
The
last Fry Street probably was, I would say, like 99 or 2000.
Didn't they move it down to Deep Ellum
like
one year?
They tried.
They did.
They did, I thought.
Mm-hmm.
They tried to resurrect it and they moved.
Well, that was Ed LaMonica from
Weird.
Grick's Place Curtain Club, I think, had a big hand in that.
Yeah.
And you know... You could kind of say that Arts Goggles kind of the same thing because it's all
is.
On one street. Well, this year.
Well, especially this year with those
streets. It was all on Magnolia,
yeah.
But it's nowhere near as insane.
No, it's not.
It's like the ant of Fry Street Fair that's very protective.
Well, that doesn't diminish the greatness of
Arts
Goggles.
Arts Goggles is amazing.
Yeah, it's a really, really cool festival. But yeah, it is in the same vein of what Fry Street Festival was about.
Yeah.
A lot of different art and music and all kinds of different people with... all kinds of different stuff that they had to offer the folks that were there. It wasn't just the music. It was the combination of all. And that's why I love Fresh Streets Fair back in the day, man. It was awesome.
So we have a few listeners that are not in the DFW area. Is there any chance that Slow Row goes down to Austin or does anything like that?
You know, at this point with a lot of the shows we do now, it's really just for fun.
Mm-hmm.
Getting back on the road and being on the road was fun, but it's also really hard.
Yeah,
it's just really tiring. You know, it's possible. I'll never say never, but I think right now, the easier the show is to do, the more likely we're going to do it. Yeah.
All right. So what's the possibilities of Alex going through, like, throw away your stereo or weightless?
And he and I have talked about that. Probably throw away your stereo would be the next one to do, because Alex really had his hands on that one a lot as well, too. And I would love to see that one remastered. When he went back and redid Starving St. Nick, he had called me up and said, "Hey, I'm kind of working on something. I'd like to get your involvement." And I was like, "Okay, what's that?" And he was like, "I'm going to remaster all the songs from Starving St. Nick." And I was totally blown away. And he put so many hours into it on his own, and worked his ass off on it. And he came out with this great, updated, polished version of what we had done way back then. And
it's ridiculous.
Yeah, it's awesome.
It's night and day.
Absolutely awesome.
And Alex owes me a 10-inch sub.
He owes you a 10-inch what?
Sub.
A 10-inch what?
Like a sub sandwich?
A 10-inch what?
A wiener. No, of course, for my truck. About. Because the night I left the grotto, I put that disc in, and my speaker just went, goodbye.
Yeah. It's amazing what he did with that.
Yeah, we're talking about Alex Gerst out at, what's his studio called again?
Empire Sound.
Empire Sound, yeah. One of the best producers and sound engineers in DFW, yeah, I think. Period.
Yeah, Alex has worked with local bands for almost two decades now. Mm-hmm. And he's the guy that has had his hands on so many artists locally. At some point, somebody, if you're in a band, you have been through his studio at some point.
And if you haven't, you should.
Yeah, and he still does a terrific job. So if you're a local musician...
He's real grassroots still, too.
Yeah.
You know, he's still in enthralled with the music scene and stuff. Wants to get stuff that's out there that's great to the masses and stuff. Mm-hmm. So, Pete, you were talking about another project that you're working on right now. Why don't you tell us a little bit about that?
I have a new project that's still in the works right now. It's called Dagger Club. And hopefully we'll have some music out now, too. But we do have a Facebook page, which you can find. But it's myself. It's Doug McGrath.
From South FM.
From South FM. And it's two of the guys from A Dozen Furies. It's Mike the drummer and Joey the guitar player. And so we've been getting together now for the last couple of months, just kind of writing some tunes and doing some recording. And hopefully we'll have some stuff out here and really kind of start playing a little bit more once we kind of
some
get...
Some shows?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, awesome. Absolutely.
When do you think that might happen? Because I know a bunch of people just freaked out that are listening. What?
Hopefully here in the next couple of months, I'd say by January, we'll probably start hitting the circuit a little bit more. We've done a couple kind of, small kind of surprise shows here and there, but, nothing really to kind of yell and scream about. Hopefully by January, we're going to be out there and doing a lot more.
Nice.
Yeah, definitely find us on Dagger Club on Facebook.
Yeah, check them out. I'm going to check it out.
Very good.
This weekend's going to be ridiculous.
Oh, it's beyond it. It's unfortunately, it's going to suck the patronage out of every other venue in Fort Worth.
You're probably right.
I apologize.
And Dallas.
Dallas, too. It's true. Yeah.
What's bad is Friday night, I'm going to see your bass player.
Oh, yeah.
Over at the Grotto. I'm going to be running back and forth. I'm going to wear myself out on that block.
Yeah, our bass player is playing two shows. He's playing there, and then he's scooting over to Lola's to play our show. So
yeah.
There's a lot of musicians that are going to be doing that all weekend long.
Lugging gear.
Ridiculous.
Yeah.
So
I don't miss that.
That's what those shows are all about.
But Lola's is going to be ridiculous.
Yeah, they're anticipating. It's going to be all staff on hand.
If you're not there, you're stupid.
You're just dumb.
You're just dumb.
And if you're not stupid, well, you're probably dead.
Yes.
I say that to myself every morning.
Well, we've been going at it. You got anything else, Matt?
No, man. I'm flabbergasted. I want to hear some Slow Row now.
Do you?
Yeah.
Well. Yeah.
Do you guys mind if I jump in real
plug
quick
whatever.
Before you do that?
Mm-hmm. And
do a quick PSA?
Sure. Do. Okay, do so. It. Can this be, is it going to be a PSA like, what's his name?
Don't
Jerry
go on
Springer's
podcast.
Minute? Like, no. As he wraps up the show, no, he puts his words of encouragement out there of how it should be? Or?
Yeah, it's going to be like that a little bit. As a psychologist, I'm all about mental health issues, and I want to kind of let a lot of people know about what's going on at Deep Ellum as far as mental health issues. And there is a Deep Ellum support group that is happening now. That's going to be every Tuesday at 6 p.m. on at 2803 Taylor Street down in Deep Ellum. And this is a free support group for musicians, for creative type of people dealing with depression, suicidal thoughts, alcohol and drug abuse. It's powered by a group called 45, which is named after Spectre 45.
Oh, nice.
And so, you know, I really want to push this, and I really want to kind of put that out there for a lot of people that struggle with these issues, that there are opportunities out there for you to get the help that you need. If you feel isolated with this stuff, this is a perfect opportunity for you to get involved with something so that you don't have to be alone with what you're dealing with. And that's one of the most important things. If you ever wanted to make yourself feel more like crap, if you're already struggling with depression, lock yourself away in your house, your apartment all weekend. Don't talk to anybody. Don't see anybody. Don't go outside. You're going to make it 10 times worse. Finding other people who know what you struggle with and being a part of that is beyond helpful. Help Man. Yourself and get out there.
Man, thanks. Thanks for doing that.
Thank you for letting me talk about that.
We should do another show and just have him in and talk about that stuff.
Are there, can you,
that would be great.
Well, what's the name? Is there a website? Is there a Facebook page?
Yeah, it's on Facebook. Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Because there's a lot of things I'd like to talk about, because like even myself being ADD my entire life, you know, I've been prescribed Adderall the last 3 years and it seems to work, I guess. I mean, I don't get high off of it like other people do that abuse it.
But he's smoking it right now.
But I would like to talk about like the long-term effects of stuff like Adderall and SSRIs and stuff like that.
Uh-huh.
Go in depth with them, because it's pretty interesting the stuff that young kids are being not really forced into their body, but it's like the schools don't want to deal with just handling a child anymore.
Right.
They want to just drug them up so that way they sit there zombified the whole day and
perpetuating
hopefully learn something.
Medicated culture.
Yeah. And that's very, very interesting to me, the culture we're getting into to where everybody is on something of some sort. And does it actually work? Is it good or is it all placebo?
Right.
Yeah. I'd like to break that down sometime if...
Yeah,
if
absolutely,
you want to.
Man. Absolutely. Yeah, there's a lot of opinion out there on it, especially with ADD medications, and not to, you know, hijack the show into a show about mental health issues. But, you know, there's a lot of slapback with medication, and, you know, there's a lot of pros and cons with it. I've seen medication do wonders for people, and then for other people, I've seen it do more harm than good. And, you know, it's a really kind of a case by case thing. But I think for a lot of people, and as we research more about mental health issues, we really do kind of get down to some of the medical basis for a lot of these things. And this is where a lot of these medications really can come in and help and really kind of help out with things. And for a lot of people who are on ADD medication, I hear them say exactly just that. You know, I hear them say, I don't know if it's working or not. That means it's working. Because you know, if you don't notice a big change, and if you don't notice that there's a big difference in your attention and focus and concentration, the medication's working.
And that's what I feel. I mean, I am more focused on things and can pay attention.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
I guess it's working. You know. It's
one of those
things. As far as the others, like the antidepressants and the mood stabilizers and things of that nature, I've also always heard that if you get prescribed that, then you also probably want to utilize counseling and therapy at the same time.
Yeah,
that's when it's really at its best.
Right, and research is going to back that up. Research is going to suggest that medication and therapy in conjoined treatment together is really kind of the way to go. There's a lot of stigma with both, you know, and sometimes people will stay away from therapy because of the stigma, and sometimes people stay away from the medication because of the stigma. And if you can work through it, if you can push yourself through that stigma, you know, both of these avenues can be something that can really assist, really get you back on your feet and give you some hope.
Well, I think that's the cool thing about the support group. Those people that can't fight through those stigmas, they can start by at least being in a group.
Yeah,
and of people and that they're mm-hmm. comfortable
people they can
around.
Relate
yeah.
with.
Yeah. And yeah. they really are around their own brood. They're around their own kin. Mm-hmm. You know, this is, you know, other musicians who struggle with this. And I tell you, there's a lot of new research that's come out on musicians with mental health issues and just how prominent mental health issues is within the creative community.
Mm-hmm.
And it is there as far as bipolar, anxiety disorders,
oh,
you know,
sure.
obviously substance abuse, even things like schizophrenia. Mm-hmm. You know, we find these things, you know, very well ingrained in just in our own community. And that's important, you know, because if we're really going to support the music scene, you know, one of the things we really have to take into consideration is the emotional side of really all of this as well too. And so
the well-being.
Yeah, you know, going out there and supporting bands and paying to get into their shows, you know, not downloading their music for free, that is all great stuff in supporting musicians. Now, this is my part of where I want to do is I want to get in there and support the mental health side of these things.
That's awesome, man.
That is really good.
That's awesome, especially coming from a guy like you that's kind of iconic in the local music scene here. That's awesome to hear you say, man.
So quick question, playing devil's advocate, what do you mm-hmm. do about the person that walks up and goes, you know, some of the best songs were written on heroin, yeah. some of their best songs were written on acid. Know, how do you fight that?
Yeah, like, you know, and a lot of people think, and you know, not to really harp on substance abuse, but I'm going to harp on substance abuse. The whole thing behind heroin and weed and all this stuff is that and alcohol is it makes you think like, yes, this is a really great idea and nobody has thought of this ever. And then you come down from your high and you look back and you go, what the fuck was I thinking?
Yeah.
You know, and that's part of what those drugs do. And so that's very attractive to creative personality types to think like, you know what, you know, if for me to be creative, I got to do this shit. I got to do this. This is how I get creative. And a lot of people are able to kind of talk themselves into that. And really the truth is that drug use and creativity are kind of counter-correlated a little bit. And what I mean by that is that the more drugs you do, the less creative you get. You know,
yeah.
You sitting on your couch playing Xbox because you were stoned out of your mind is not you at your most creative moment.
True.
Laughing at farts.
But you know, it's also part of that kind of artistic idea too, that like, you know, I have to be pain. I have to be in pain in order to be creative. It's that yeah. whole, you know, tortured artist kind of mentality mm-hmm. a little bit. And I hear a lot of people that are convinced that, yeah, hey, my best work comes out from when I feel like shit, or my best work comes out from when I feel high. And, you know, to really understand that, you know, a lot of what I've learned is that that's just not the case.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the best stuff I've written, some of the best stuff I've played has always come from me in a sober mind. People who know me, I have a history of, I don't drink. I've never really been into drugs. My blood's kind of like spring water in that sense. So a lot of people who are substance abusers have a tough time kind of identifying with me on that as an artist. But you know, if you've been out there, if you've heard stuff from music I've done and you have found it creative, you know, understand that that's something I did without any of that. And that's important to me.
Yeah.
I think you're starting to see a trend though, that there's a lot of musicians, younger folks that are coming up musicians and bands, what have you, that are seeing the benefits of not delving too far into alcohol or drugs or at all to create their art, to mm-hmm. be able to purvey their art. They're seeing the benefits of just being of clean living and doing that. And that's, I think that's more prominent now than it was back in the day.
Absolutely.
And yeah. I think that's a trend that's starting to increase, and I hope it becomes,
I've noticed
all
that
out.
A lot on the Fort Worth side and yeah. the South side. You
sure.
know, we, right now the South side is exploding.
Right.
And I've seen a lot of that talking to people where they're just like, you know,
I don't drink, I don't do anything.
Man,
the others, right. I know a lot of musicians that I book and that I work with and stuff who just made a conscious decision that, man, I really don't need any kind of supplement to be creative, to be able to create things or mm-hmm. or do anything productive. Mm-hmm. I just live my life every day and write songs or paint this or sculpt that or take pictures or whatever.
And I know that sounds so kind of sis boom rah, you know, and you know, really positive. But you know, absolutely, you know, there's research to support that,
right.
And that is just it is a truth that's out there when you're talking about the whole creative process.
Well, I was going to say it is also evident in their work.
Yeah,
you can tell the differences between folks that are like, you know, that maybe delve too far down that road versus living clean or whatever. And I think it's night and day in some cases, the difference between their art.
Man, Pete, let me bounce this off you. Have you thought about doing a podcast? Like just doing what you're doing now, talking about, you know.
And putting it out there for people, for musicians.
You know,
that
would be helpful.
I haven't done a podcast. I do a lot of talking, especially on the issue of suicide and self-injury and creative personality types and struggling with depression and things like that too. But I have not thought of doing a podcast.
Give it some thought, man. You'd be awesome at it, especially with your message.
I mean, microphone, computer, or a little recorder. That's all you need. You just post them up in iTunes. People go download and listen to them. I mean, there's...
Should we copyright his podcast right now?
What's your domain? We're going to buy it.
Man, it's been awesome to have you guys in here.
Thanks,
This is definitely one of our favorite shows. My favorite show. I guess I can speak for you.
Yeah, I would put that there. This is one of my favorite shows, and I'm excited to what it's leading to.
Yeah.
Like, I'm
big
so
weekend.
Excited about this weekend.
Yeah.
It's going to be really, really good.
A lot of folks from the Fort Worth, the Dallas-Fort Worth music scenes past and present and future that are going to be there to celebrate the Rec Room Revival. So I'm
Can't
excited.
Wait.
Yeah.
I think we're going to close the show out with Boys Lie, Girls Steal.
There you go.
That is awesome. I appreciate that.
Can Everybody I just hold this that. Up well? Because that's my favorite. I'm sorry. I know it's it may be the most played. It's my favorite song by you guys.
I have two songs that I love. It's that one and Supermodel.
Yeah. Oh,
I love Supermodel's
Badass.
Those are two of my favorite to play live, too. Man.
And Friends I'd Like to Kill.
So I know you couldn't.
I like that one, but you know that. It's a very negative message to put out. After what we just talked
from
about.
Such a positive guy.
It's interesting. That's about us. A lot of my lyrics, a lot of the stuff is very sarcastic and very kind of tongue-in-cheek in that sense. And so that song in particular is also very
sarcastic. I'm going to sing this. Take this with a grain of salt.
So let's talk about Boys Lie, Girls Steal real quick.
Yeah.
Y'all did an amazing video for that.
Yeah.
Absolutely amazing. Where was that shot at?
I was shot at this little washateria down in Dallas, close to downtown, off of Lower Greenville.
No, it's off of Carroll.
I thought you were going to say bar of soap. I was going to be like, what?
Yeah.
How'd y'all get bar of soap so bright?
Yeah. And then a lot of the live music scenes were shot in Curtain Club.
Yeah, you can see Curtain Club
for
the live music scenes. Now, that video... Was that shot with Sony money, or how did that work out?
That was shot with Reality Entertainment money.
Okay.
It was directed by a guy named Peter Besson.
Because it looks fantastic. I mean,
it's great. It was absolutely a fun day. We did a roll call for that just a couple days before and got a lot of people into Curtain Club, and a lot of our fans showed up, and we're so happy and so really so pleased that they came out and support us for that. And we all had a great time. You know, we sat there and we all lip synced to the song.
A hundred times.
And then, you know, took it to the next location after that in this small washateria with, hot girls and,
how many
and people
shots,
fighting. And
how many shots did that take to make sure everything lined up right?
Yeah.
So there was no nudity.
I think I lost count after it. I do know that with the closeness they got to it, the girl in the video, if you've seen it, she's actually wearing a flesh colored bodysuit.
Oh, there
so
it is.
So at no point is she actually
just ruined.
Ruined
it.
I know, right?
Ruined
right.
Years.
The myth
of my
is
mind.
Blown. The myth is blown.
Dang it! Come on.
But you know what? Hey, there's lots of other stuff to look on the internet if you need to see naked chicks. There's plenty.
So true.
What is
like
this
Tony doing stuff to himself.
The video you're going to share later.
Yes. Yeah. I'm getting that up right now.
Tony.
All right, well, let's get out of here. We're going to play that song. I want to thank Tony Diaz, you coming out. Been wanting to have you on for
a while.
Thank
you. Thank you so much.
Glad you could finally come.
Fun. Yep.
Peter.
Thank you, man. I appreciate you letting us come out here, and I appreciate definitely what you guys do with all of this and supporting local music. I think that is just absolutely fucking awesome.
See, we figured it was better for us to support local music in this way instead of us still making shitty music.
Yeah.
And just putting it out there.
We should stop and promote other folks' stuff, man.
Let's just give up what we're doing, and we'll just do this podcast.
And we all thank you for that.
Yeah.
And Tony E.,
thank you guys very much.
Appreciate you coming out.
For promoting this. Tony Diaz, kudos to you.
Thank you.
And PCX for,
definitely. Thank
for
you,
putting
man,
on the show this weekend.
Thanks, guys. Yeah. Can't wait to see you guys play.
Yeah, go come out to the show. Go to the State Fair. See the exhibit with Slow Roosevelt out there.
Right. You
get there early. It closes at 7 p.m. every day.
Is this the last weekend at State Fair?
It is.
I think it is.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It is. All right. Yeah. So
you can buy your tickets for Record Revival on Prekindle.
Yes,
so make sure to do that.
Hop on Prekindle. If you're on, just hop on Facebook and look up Lola's Saloon or Lola's Rec Room Revival,
or go to Hand Drawn Records,
or there's
go to the Slow Row page, and we'll post.
Yeah, the Slow Row page.
Go to the Slow Row page. Tomorrow we'll have it up on our page too. Nice. There's going to be links everywhere.
The internet will be full of it.
Full of it, and be there this Friday, Saturday, Sunday. It's going to be amazing. Real quick, we want to thank our friends, the Funky Town Podcast, Jeffrey Lord, our buddy, Red Pants, Robotuner's Insignificant Podcast. Go check him out. Our friends over at Off Radar and, the Intoxicated Gamer and Atypical DFW changed to Tyree Radio now. And we didn't get to any phone calls this week or emails, so send them in. For next week, you can give us a call at 682-593-JJTM, and we are out of here. Thanks, guys.
Later. Thank you, man.
That are able, we're trying, but dying to sue.